Scott Gorsester.
Perfect.
Who is the...
I know you stressed over that.
I mean, it's like, oh, stressing over these names. John Smith, raise your hand. I want you. Scott is founder and CEO of Virtual Cube. He's an IT visionary and entrepreneur. He is a seasoned businessman, skilled IT architect, technician, and trainer. He and his team designed and built the technology stacks in use by Virtual Cube today. Scott's former company, Moose Logic, I love the name, received numerous accolades, including 3 consecutive years on the list of fastest growing companies in Washington State. His company was the number one reseller of Citrix software in the first quarter 99, finishing the year trailing only Dell and CDW, or as some of us may remember it, Computer Discount Warehouse.
Thank you.
I don't know who said all those things about me, but...
Appreciate the intro. It's a pleasure to be here to speak with you today. I've got a number of slides, and I have a very long, boring speech here that I'm not going to read, although some very good information in it. If you'd like a copy of it, drop your card by or let us know, and we'll send you a copy. Obviously, we do a lot of cloud work, but we're not just cloud. We still do a number of on-premise deployments and support of systems for customers. Typically, we would consider them private clouds. And then we do offer today private, public, and hybrid options for cloud computing. And we're based in Seattle. Hear some talk these days about it being called the cloud capital of the world. I think it's nice we're among a lot of good company in the area. And we were one of the original Citrix resellers in 1994. So obviously Citrix is a product that drives a lot of cloud computing. And by the end of the 90s, we designed and deployed over 1,000 systems. And so, this 14, 15 years later, we've been continuing to do that. And we like to talk about it a lot in our company and as our part of our culture, that we really practice integrity. And really that's, in the data center, on premise, in our conversations, very important to us. And it's not always easy, but it's something we strive to. I think we do a great job of that. And a lot of communication as we work with clients and do our projects as well. And we have experience in healthcare, hospitals, clinics, ER, and specialty, and then a lot of other environments outside of healthcare. To us, a clinic or a hospital is another business customer for us, and certainly have some very unique requirements. And, there's been a lot of talk about the cloud today. I want to kind of cut through some of the marketing and fluff and really just get to some of the lessons that we've learned from the field. So we'll just we'll skip through some of these. I liked Carl came up with the cloud feels like techie infiltration to a very human set of processes. So I think that's a great comment. And it has a lot of promises. We hear some companies say, well, we'll just go provision a cloud up at Amazon. Well, that's great. You know, what are you going to put up there? Who's going to design it for you? Are you aware, it's great service, but certainly some very important issues to be aware of in deploying that. And we use it, we like it, but it's not for everyone. And, one of the challenges is how we ensure workflows are improved. And I think really critical that everyone's part of the process. And we've seen in some cases that that's not always the case. And so we like the idea of an open environment. I would say transparency in the architecture and design, proof of concept, pilot phases, and deployment of the technology. And so again, a sound, transparent decision. That's one of the things we've run into is not all decisions are sound and not all decisions are transparent. We worked in a hospital a couple of years ago, and I actually went in and did the proof of concept, stood up the pilot project, and we delivered a superior set of technologies during the pilot. We hands down won the technology battle. It worked better, it was faster, it was easier to use, and had more features. And at the end of the day, it was considerably less expensive than the competition, and yet the decision was to go with our competition. And we found this to be a little baffling. Why, if it was better, more features, faster, easier to use, and cheaper, was the decision made to go with the competition? And ultimately, it occurred to us it was a highly political decision that ignored what we set out to prove in the pilot. And interestingly enough, this caused a number of problems within the organization, and ultimately two technologists left their jobs there. And a year later, we got the call from an administrator that they felt they'd made a mistake and were very unhappy with the decision that they'd made. So, you know, so for us, there's some real important lessons to be learned there. And I think the, you know, the feeling, I think the idea would be is that, you know, choose based on what's best for the business and best for the organization. And in some cases, maybe bring different teams in to help analyze that. One of the things we saw in that particular proposal that we put forth is that not only was the overall price less, but some of the components in the proposal were superior to what they actually purchased. I think one way around that is potentially to bring consultants in to help keep the consultants honest, right? You know, if you've got a provider that's two providers that are recommending solutions, obviously they're at odds, they're doing battle, and they're going to tell you, you know, a number of things. But is there a component of someone who can come in as a disinterested party and help you with those decisions? Obviously, proof of concepts and pilots to pilot programs to get the kinks out. We've seen a number of missteps in healthcare with this. In some cases, they would go with a pilot project, but that pilot would be put directly into production. And in some cases, we'd get the call that things aren't working well, but we've already committed to production. And so ultimately, our observation was is that there really wasn't a clear process for vetting out the pilot and then really standing up a production deployment. So unfortunately, we've seen that many, many times, that the pilot gets thrust into production. It really wasn't designed that way from the beginning. So keep the pilot, proof of concept's important step, move to a pilot, and then have a scenario where you can then put the technology properly into production. In one case, in a regional clinic, we had provided a proposal to provide a virtualization solution for a single workload. And we did that, and it went well. And a few weeks, I think it was maybe 2 months later, we got a call for support. And when we went in to look at this server, there were 12 workloads running on one single host. And we asked the question, you know, what are these workloads? Are these important workloads? And, oh, yeah, there were some critical workloads running there. These were 12 Windows servers. And so, you know, we rose the question with the tech team there, you know, that, wait a minute, you know, this originally was designed for a single workload. What happened? Well, we know what happened. We call it server sprawl. Right? It's so easy to deploy into a virtualization or cloud technology that ultimately then they just started deploying. And so we said, well, this is a huge risk. You haven't designed the solution to handle, you know, critical workloads. And, you know, we think that this is a pretty serious mistake. And the technicians that we were on the phone with kind of breathed a huge, you know, sigh of, oh my God, someone understands. And so they asked me if we would speak to their management, because ultimately management found out it was so easy to deploy new servers, they just instructed them to go about it. And so we brought management in and we talked to them about the risks and the fact that a properly designed solution would have multiple hosts and live motion or agility so that if a host fails, you don't lose 12 workloads immediately. So obviously that would be the risk in that environment. And so I think the last bullet there about having ongoing improvement committees is great. We see that often in our own with our own customers on our own cloud, that people get somewhat entrenched into a way of doing their daily work, and there may be better ways to do that or ways that we can solve some issues within the environment. It's easy for technologists because, you know, if I want a new computer, I build it. If I want a new app or a new cloud solution, I can put it on there. But for our customers, they don't necessarily understand all of those issues, and so we really like to go in, you know, on some sort of cadence, whether it's quarterly or yearly, and really look at how people are working and what we can do to improve the experience. And sometimes it's just training. The actual technology may already be in place, or with small adjustments and tweaks can be quickly resolved. And so I think this is sometimes what you think you're going to get isn't what you get. So you know, we like the idea of you know, being very clear, and that would be certainly vetted out and tested in a proof of concept and a pilot project. And sometimes too, you know, we run up against this concept of, you know, really wanting to get a big return on your investment. Well, obviously, that's important to all of us. It's important to me. But sometimes the new solution may offer economies of scale or value or benefits that are even more powerful than, you know, simple ROIs. How are we doing on time? Good. The I think this is another bullet here, significant underestimations of the technical skills needed and budgeted. In a number of cases, and this comes from healthcare as well, we find that management, you know, has a vision and a goal for technology, but in many cases they're pushing the technologists to deploy and manage solutions that they're not properly skilled and trained at. And, you know, that can be a real problem, right? It puts a lot of pressure on the technical staff. We worked with another clinic, and it was a great team of people. This was a rural healthcare clinic and a good-sized one. And the technologists were all very young. They were in their early 20s. But they were smart people. They were passionate about doing great work. But what we really learned over time is that they weren't properly trained for some of the new technologies. And so we definitely really want to look towards the idea of making sure that your teams are equipped to handle, you know, the new products that are coming in and comfortable and clear on what the goals are. And obviously the pilot's like a test drive. It really vets out and is designed to test and prove whether the technology works for you and whether, I would say, you know, an important step is, do the products you've chosen work as advertised? I was an instructor for many years around Citrix technology, and I always felt that it was important not only to teach the class about what the technology holds, but also where the realities of field deployments differ from the marketing and the message you might get, right? So I at one point in time, I had someone say, well, you know, it's really weird. You work for Citrix, and yet you're talking bad about them. And so the first thing is, well, I don't work for Citrix. I work for, at the time, Moose Logic. But it's not that I'm talking bad about the technology. I actually love this technology. I've been doing this for since 1994. I'm still doing it. I still believe in the technology. The fact is, not everything they say in their materials works as you may think in the real world. And so that really was the idea that this is great, not so great, and not good at all. And so I think that's where an important part. We were just on the phone, I heard a little earlier today at another show, we met a company that says, we're about ready to push the delete button on a VDI implementation, hundreds of seats. And we said, really, why? I said, well, it doesn't work, and it hasn't worked. We've had 7 providers in, and the solution still doesn't work as advertised, and we are 100% convinced that it is an inherent flaw in the product. And we said, no, we're not. We're relatively certain it's something to do with the architecture or a failure of deploying the technology right. And we got on the phone today and we basically said, you should use that, you should do that, but you shouldn't use this component. Let's get that out of the environment. We'll get this thing stood up. And we got a block of hours to go in and do some consulting and get it straightened out. So vet it out, make sure it works. Typically, unless your pilot's designed to go into production, don't do it. And, you know, in the pilot, internal processes also get vetted out. And hopefully we would, you know, test, find issues early on and, you know, and find risks in the deployment. The other thing that I run into many times is that in many cases, our customers want the pilot process to be free, no charge. And in some cases, that can be pulled off. In the case of one of the solutions I talked about a little bit earlier, we charged for the pilot project. The first vendor in didn't, but they actually got funding from HP and another hypervisor company to fund it. So the provider was paid to do it, but to the hospital, it was actually a free pilot. We weren't able to offer that. And I think one of the issues was is that during the pilot, there was, you know, a lot of interest, rightly so, to test every single potential component. It's a lot of work. This was heads down 3 weeks of time for a single engineer, and we got it all vetted out. Now, that was great from a standpoint of the pilot, but really hard to deliver in a free pilot. And And then, of course, we always like to focus on the end user's needs, both in process and experience. And I think, you know, from a cloud provider perspective, we know that it's important to be concerned with the fingers on the keyboard. What's the experience for the user? Where are our frustrations? Got a call from, saw an email about one of our staff having some troubles, and then our channel manager piped up and says, do we really want one of our own staff frustrated with our cloud? And we said no, and we got on the phone with him, and his frustrations weren't actually with the cloud. It was a bunch of other things associated with it, and it was really interesting. But, you know, one of the biggest issues was he was having problems with occasional websites in IE. And so I told him, I said, well, you know, whenever you have a problem in a browser, just switch browsers. So I got an email from him yesterday. It was brilliant. He says, I've now learned that 90% of the time it's just the browser. And he says, 9% of the time, it's me doing something that I either shouldn't be or didn't understand. And 1% of the time, it's actually technology. So it was kind of an interesting issue. And I think from us, we like to be somewhat heterogeneous, right? I love Citrix, but I love the other products as well. The way I think about technology is a toolkit. And the idea that, you know, if I've got a large nail to pound into a piece of wood, I'm not going to pick a small finishing hammer. I want the right tool for the job. So we tend to look at what's right for the customer, what's right for the business, and what delivers the best performance and best solution. And that might be working with a number of different products. So we tend to not focus on a small set of products. And while we don't want to, you know, focus on all products, we choose a blend of products to get the job done well and get it done properly. You know, one of my opinions of many technology projects is it's a little bit like if you decided you wanted to go on a trip, and so to go on a trip, you decided you're going to get a car. And so, you know, my question would be, would you build it? Would you start buying parts and pieces and assemble it? And if you did, how would that go? The way I look at it is, if you like building cars, great. I happen to like that. But in small businesses or even larger businesses, the idea is there's a better solution that's probably pre-architected and pre-designed to work well for you. And at the end of the day, it's going to be more cost-effective to just get the turnkey solution and implement that. I like the idea of hire the right experts. I was reading a blog post a few weeks ago about a guy who said, my boss said I have to deploy Zen desktop solution in 2 weeks' time. I have no idea what I'm doing. What do you recommend? But run would be a good one. You know, these are, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to deploy a VDI solution, but there are very, very important architectural concerns. And if you miss even one component, like the company I talked about a little while ago, a lot of time and money's been spent. It's not working right. And at the end of the day, a couple of architectural differences will probably sort that out. So, you know, really have, if you don't have the, you know, proper training and experience on site, bring people in to help with that. Make sure that training's in place and people know what's expected of them. And so, and then I like the idea of the strategic integrator for advice only. I was working with a customer, this was probably about 7 or 8 years ago, a pretty large restaurant and nightclub, had a sophisticated Citrix solution, and they were having some problems. And one of the things that I said to them was they'd actually done kind of their own general contracting. So a friend had come in and done all the Cat 5 wiring, Cat 5's 5E, I think, at the time. And so I noticed that there were some rules broken in the deployment of the network. And so I said, you need to have this network tested, fully tested out for, you know, for Cat 5 for gigabit communications. And they said, great. And so about a week later, I got the call. Yeah, we brought the guy in, and he tested it all out. And he said, it's great. And who'd you bring in? Well, the guy who put it in. So I said, well, that's a bad idea, because I happen to know that one run is 400 feet, breaks the laws of Ethernet. So, you know, I'm not saying it's a problem, but we haven't proven it's not. So the next step was to bring in an expert who basically came and said, yeah, it's junk. So I think that's a really great advice, is to, even before you purchase, make sure that you understand, you know, everything you need to know and whether it's the right solution for the job. And listen to believers and skeptics. I think that's great advice. You know, and then I think the general idea, buy-in gained from the pilot, is include people, you know, include staff. We tend to really focus on a lot of user acceptance testing. Once the system's up and running for testing, make sure that we get people working on it and we understand the challenges that individuals face. You know, as technologists, we don't always get it. I loved the years ago, I did a point of sale solution. This is in the mid-90s. And I got the call, well, printing is really slow. I said, well, really, how slow is it? Well, it takes 9 seconds. Well, it's not very slow, actually. That's actually pretty good on a wide area network, right? And so I said, well, no, you know. So I went down there and I stood there and, you know, 9 seconds waiting for a receipt to print out is a long time. And it creates a very interesting, you know, scenario where people are impatient. So again, you know, work with people you trust, delivers, plan your work your plan, stay committed, and think from the user's point of view for high adoption. Thank you very much.